You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Captain's Holiday. And I'm Chris from South Carolina.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Chris from South Carolina. Is everything a little drier now?
Much drier, man. It's nice and starting to get cool down here, which rarely happens. And it's always nice when it does. So, fall finally struck us.
Oh, good. Yeah, I can't seem to find anything that would de-ice my wood deck. You have any ideas, any suggestions? I'm about ready to put some sand down. Yeah, right. Yeah.
The sun?
My deck is on the north side of the house. The sun comes up on the east, goes around the south, and as it gets to the west, where I might get a little bit of sunlight, it's already down now. So, it's solid, and I can't figure out how to de-ice it. I'm thinking maybe just put some sand down, give it a little bit of traction, but yeah, just get some skates and... All right, so, Chris, you still recording the upper pylon, too?
Si, senor.
Si, senor. How's that going?
It's going well. I was out for a while with some sickness and some family stuff, and I only missed one show, I think, and maybe a couple of feedbacks, but I'm back, and we're still going strong, and everything's going well with it. And actually, Lou, you'll be glad to know, recorded a little teaser at the end of our episode this time, our feedback episode that'll go out today, that talks about all the other Trekmate shows that are currently going, and then points back to the website for all the ones that are in our past.
Sweet.
So, yeah, that'll be out as soon as we end this podcast, which will be, I don't know how many weeks ago, when it finally hits the airwaves for you.
So you're saying that Upper Pylon 2 listeners are waiting for us to get done so they can listen to your next show?
No.
Oh.
But I'm saying that we advertised for the entire Trekmate network.
Wonderful.
At the end of our episode. And I think we're going to probably do that on all of our feedback episodes from here on. So.
That's cool. And I did get an email from Blair. They are... You know, he's trying to pimp me to get on the show, and I...
Hey, man, he's good at that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to find that episode that really I feel that much for, and I think you're still in season two. Oh, it's starting to come around, but...
It's good now. Season two is when it starts getting good, right?
Well, of course, but, you know...
Actually, season one was good, in my opinion, but I don't know. My opinion is not. Yeah. I'm more James than you, Lou.
Right.
Well, sorry, I was about to jump in here and say that season one of DS9 is fine. It really is absolutely fine. Season two has some great stuff in it as well.
Ella Moraine, count to four. Ella Moraine, then three more.
Well, I'm probably as down on Move Along Home as anyone can be. But there's some great stuff in season one. There really is.
I actually love that episode a lot. as a board gamer, as a guy who's played some D&D. Like, I get it. I would love to meet the entire culture that is established around playing board games. I think that's an incredible idea.
Okay. But also, right, you know, DS9 went for 7 seasons. It's got, you know, 170-odd episodes in it. There are some episodes that, you know, you might be able to argue that are bad and that are poorly thought through and badly executed at the beginning. And TNG had things with, you know, the Naked Now and stuff like that. But... When you have
episodes... Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Hang on. Here we go. What I'm saying is that But when you have these episodes and you take all this quotable dialogue away from it, and it's, you know, everyone knows fully what fully functional means. Everyone knows Alan Moraine. It's kind of just part of the culture, right? So in their way, even if you don't enjoy them as episodes, they're great as kind of as cultural landmarks throughout kind of our journey through Trek.
Yeah. He's partly right. I mean, how many times have we said, no vaccine, no Lieutenant Yaw?
Absolutely.
That episode, though, is terrible. We actually just hit an episode like that in DS9, and I'd forgotten it was even there, called Melora.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I hate it.
You guys remember Melora? Yeah. It's terrible. So terrible and offensive. Towards...
Well, hang on. Melora has the Klingon food bar, right?
Yes, that's the best part of it. That's the only decent part of it.
Yes.
I don't think I've seen it in maybe 10 years, but, you know, he's got the big, you know, there's the discussion about her, we've barely touched your gah. And he said, oh, no, I have. You know, it's, it moved itself around the plate. All of that stuff's great. And I know it's probably about 2 minutes, but.
It's not.
Yeah. There's the Hippocratic Oath gone out the airlock.
There's that with the zero G sex.
Yeah.
With your patient, your not so long ago former patient.
Right.
There's just all the stuff with the disabled and handicapped, which was just ill thought out and ill.
And then he planned. Does it again on what's her name, Serena.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, with Chrysalis, right?
Yeah.
That one's way better told. Like, I'm glad that. Yeah.
Yeah, that anyway. Is a better thing. Those three were awesome.
Melora is by far the ickiest episode I've seen of Deep Space Nine yet. In fact, everybody talks about Move Along Home and If Wishes Were Horses and how bad those episodes are. Those episodes are way better than Melora ever dreamed of being. I put Melora in the same space as, I don't even remember the name of the one you guys are always quoting, but the one with the racial stereotypes.
Oh, yeah. Code of Honor.
Yeah.
So do you guys think Beryl is creepy, just like the Gamma Quadrant thought it?
Creepy Beryl. I don't think anybody thinks he's creepy. He's inconsistent.
Yeah.
He goes from being wooden to being a little weird to being normal and affable, and he's just inconsistent so far. So we haven't gotten enough of him yet. I think we've only had 4 episodes with him, and three of those he played a very small part.
Cool.
So
Beryl dies, right, by the end of season 2, or is it
does he
into season 3?
I thought it. I don't know. To be honest, I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure where it places.
I thought that it comes fairly quick, because you need the new. You know, you need the new. When do you get the new Kai? When does the new Kai come along? That's in season 2, I think. With
yes.
Kai Witt.
Yes, I think so.
So I think that's the switch they do. So obviously they have Beryl stand down effectively from running for Kai, and then it's half a year later or so when he gets put in the position he's in, and he meets the end. So it's probably season 3.
Hmm. So when you get to something like, you know, the best and the worst of DS9, you know, who was the best, Kai, Opaka, or Wynn? And as much as I liked Opaka, Wynn has to win out.
No, she doesn't.
Oh, God.
Opaka is the better Kai. Wynn is the better character for our story.
Exactly. Wynn is much better for what we needed the Kai to be, what needed them to be. Opaka wouldn't have had it in her to be like Wynn. So, hey, before we get into today's show, guys, I've been meaning to bring something up since The Defector. And, Chris, you weren't on for The Defector.
I was not.
But you can sure weigh in on this, James. Something we completely glazed over that we never talked about that I think we should have is prepare to extend our shields around the Romulan scout ship. So, obviously, that is a very new concept, I think. I've never heard Captain Kirk extend our shields around anything. And so I thought, how is that even possible, to extend our shields around the Romulan scout ship?
Hang on, do you think that's new? Because I thought that Kirk did that.
I don't recall ever seeing that before.
Okay, so I mean, like... I don't know the episode actually 100% well enough, but doesn't he try to do... I seem to recall in the original series him at least... Well, at least trying to take damage ahead of protecting another ship. I mean, even in things like Doomsday Machine, are you sure there's no reference to kind of extending and extending shields?
Certainly not that I recall, but... You know, I thought maybe we could talk about extending our shields around something. It, like LaForge said, you know, at that distance, you know, shields won't take much punishment. And I was thinking, is that even possible? Should that be even possible?
Okay, so I think the question comes up. and, you know, you've got me not prepared for this. But what exactly are shields?
Energy, I suppose.
I don't think that's good enough.
Right. Answer. I don't really understand shields, to be honest. I don't understand what makes a shield.
Okay, because I've always taken away from it that there's like a shield and also like a force field, right?
Right.
It's some kind of contained kind of like matter stream that doesn't allow you to get through. So it's one of these things you can switch on and switch off. You obviously can't walk through a wall. But also, I was always under the impression that what they effectively had was some type of particle stream that went, if we're talking about containment fields or when you're thrown in the brig, I always thought it was like a whole load of particle streams that come down that effectively form a solid barrier, but you can kind of control them, turn them on and turn them off. Effectively like a big shower of some description, but it's obviously charged particles rather than water. I was under the impression that shields would work in a fairly similar way. So you'd be able to like generate a set of, you know, effectively a set of particles that would encompass the ship. And as someone threw something towards you, then effectively they wouldn't hit you, but they would hit this kind of particle stream thing that then would dissipate the energy. And that's why you would always have this concept of, you know, how full the shields are, because it would literally be almost like a physical barrier that would have to push through. So I've always understood them as being something similar to that, at which point I think it makes sense for you to be able to extend shields, because the way that you'd be controlling it is most likely through some kind of electromagnetic field. I mean, that's what you'd usually probably describe it as in today's science, but I'm sure they'll find a way of it being a quantum magnetic field in the future. And as a result, by just changing certain parameters of what's projecting this field, you could easily see it as being extended or contracted into different areas. Yeah. So I've always thought that that's what shields were, and that would be fine.
So if I understood you a little bit here, it's kind of like a steady stream of water in a line pushing downward or something, right?
Right, sure.
But then wouldn't it have pushed the scout ship away instead of going around the scout ship?
Well, I think you'd have control over that.
Yeah.
You'd have control. And the thing that keeps the thing that keeps it in this kind of sphere would be you'd have like a containment, like a magnetic field in some sense. So you know, like if you play with magnets, you can put a magnet on a sheet of paper and you can actually see that the iron filings all meet in a particular area. And you can kind of control that through electromagnets, at least through, you know, changing the voltage and other bits and pieces surrounding it, and also the distance. And I would imagine it's kind of working on that kind of, you know, that kind of approach. So effectively you have some type of field, and when I say field, I am talking in a like physics sense. Mm. You have some type of electromagnetic field that effectively defines the boundary, and then you have some type of matter stream or energized particles or something, which effectively provides the thing that the other thing is going to bump into, and eventually those get worn away, and eventually that's when your shields drop. That's how I've always understood it. But this could be complete nonsense.
Chris, anything?
Yeah, I never had any thoughts about it. I always just assumed it was like the jelly, you know, like the shields are like jelly and the ship is like in the middle of the jelly, and you know, if they wanted to stick somebody else in there, they totally could. I don't have any clue. I honestly never think about it.
Whatever that was.
If you want,
that's
my also...
computer. It occasionally whistles.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. I got the same thing here.
I mean, if you want me to go a little bit further on this, there is a... so there's always talk about being able to contain things with magnetic fields, and effectively they would operate in a fairly similar way. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a physical barrier, but what you have kind of a barrier under which particles can't escape because there's they have to overcome too much energy in order to make the transition across. And often you would see things like, you know, warp containment fields work in that kind of way. One thing that does come up in real science is this notion that you wouldn't be able to contain a warp reactor within a sphere. And that's due to the, when you put together a sphere, you are not in a position to be able to maintain a magnetic field across the entirety of the sphere without parts of the sphere having no magnetic field in them. And that's in particular the poles. And this is comes into physics as what is, you know, colloquially known as the hairy ball theory. And what that means is that the magnetic field in a sphere will have at least two points where there's no magnetic field, at which point things would be able to escape. So if you try to push that over to things like shields and so on, it's very unlikely that you'd be able to get spherical shields working, for what it's worth.
Huh. Fascinating. This is why we're glad to have you on the show.
No.
You know what you're talking about. We don't. All right, Chris. Well, you look properly confused, so it's time to go on.
Oh, no, sorry. I tuned completely out while you guys were going through that. That's how uninterested I am in the shields. And I was actually reading a thing about the new Rocky Balboa film.
I'm sorry. Okay, before we go on to today's show, could you please expand on what you're talking about? What new Rocky Balboa film?
Oh, so there's a new film called Creed, and it's essentially in the Rocky pantheon because it's about Apollo Creed's kid.
Oh, really?
I've heard it's really good. I've heard it's fantastic.
When's that coming out?
It just came out last week.
It's already out? Wow.
Yes, sir.
Yep. So, Rocky's pretty much taken the Apollo role for his son.
I'm not sure how all that works out. I haven't seen it, but I would assume that that's what happens.
Oh, my God. What more could they possibly do? Okay.
The synopsis for tonight's show is... Picard takes a much-needed vacation on Risa, but unwelcome events keep interfering with his rest. This is the 19th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek: The Next Generation. The original release date is April 2nd, 1990, written by Ira Steven Bluehair, and directed by Chip Chalmers. Guest stars include... Should I read that like a question? Guest stars include.
Hold on there. I'm kind of lost somewhere here.
What happened?
Ira Steven Bluehair.
Have you ever seen a picture of Ira Steven Bear?
Or indeed met him.
Have you ever seen the videos of him like interviewing for all the Star Trek, The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, like DVD sets and all that?
I don't recall.
He had blue hair in all of those, and that's how I remember him forever.
Oh, that guy. Now I know who you're talking about. Yeah, he is a little goofy. There's somebody that must have smoked a lot of marijuana when he was a younger man.
It helped him become a really great writer.
Absolutely.
I'm not mad at him for it.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
He was one of the best they had. But anyway, I'm sorry, go on.
Blue hair. Yeah, the first image that comes up when I Google search him is him with that blue goatee.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm all with it. I like it. Sorry. So on this question, guest stars include?
No, you do not need to read that as a question.
Is that a question or an estate? Oh, yeah.
Jennifer Hetrick as Vash. Karen Landry as Azure. Michael Champion as Bortaus. Max Grodinchik as Sovak. And Deidre Immershane as Joval.
Huh. Is that a question mark? That's funny. Yeah, but at least the edit's not there. Used to say edit for a while, but Ben read edit, so I took off edit. Oh, well.
It also doesn't say Star Trek, but I just made that one up without asking.
So I had some editing to do. You see, and I fixed that because
Star of... Star the Next Generation.
That is funny. I fixed that because of Ben. It actually had the word edit before the guest stars. I thought, oh, God. See, I'm going to just change that. So I've changed the whole thing, and I left out Trek. That's funny. See, on a scale of 1 to Ben, my intro gets a Ben.
Anyway. I'm not sure what that means exactly. 5 stars? Yeah. Are you saying 5 stars?
Oh, yeah, because I screwed it up so badly. It's got to deserve 5 stars. James would have reread it before he pushed it out. So, anyway, let's go on. So, what do you think about this episode, Chris?
I chose to come on this episode.
Yeah.
This was actually the episode I wanted probably the most out of the ones that I signed up for. And then I got lucky and got yesterday's Enterprise as well. So putting that one to the side, yesterday's Enterprise, which wasn't on the table for me to come on for. Out of the episodes you gave me the option for, this was my favorite one. This was the one I wanted to come on for the most. So I like this episode. I like it a lot. I think it's ridiculous and madcap. However, I had not seen a similar episode on Risa from Enterprise before I saw this. And I guess no one had if they were watching at the time.
So.
But now that I've seen that episode from Enterprise, I kind of like that one a little better. But whatever. Here we are.
Yeah, but it seems like okay, James, why don't you tell us first?
Well, that's a deep subject. So I watched this last week because, we unfortunately got delayed in recording by a week. So I watched this last week and I kind of, you know, put together my notes, my thoughts. And then kind of today I thought, oh, I better watch it again just to refresh my memory and so on. And it's been notched down a whole star since last week. And, I have kind of more fond memories of this episode than I did enjoy watching the episode in a very strange way. Now, I didn't see this episode before we knew that Vash came back and there was like more to, you know, and Risa became its own thing going forward. So in that respect, this episode kind of gets more significant, not because of itself, but because of what happened, you know, around some of the ideas in this episode. There are some things you can obviously quote from this episode, and it's ridiculous in the sense of, you know, the same way as Naked Now and Move Along Home are with, you know, people seeking Jomaharon. And that's become kind of part of the cultural, you know, identity of Trekkies. So I don't think the episode is good. I think the episode becomes better in context of what it later kind of breeds. And yeah, I'll kind of leave it at that at this point. So, Lou, how about you?
Well, just like you, last week I had watched the episode and I took notes and I had them ready for last week, and then somehow they seem to have disappeared. So, just like my notes obliterated, so did this episode. Captain Picard goes to the prostitution planet. It's pretty much what I looked at it as. And all you need, you don't need money in this place. All you need is this Horgon. And you just sit it next to you, and before you wake up from your nap, somebody could be on top of you. I guess that's the gist of this. Nobody has ever gone to Risa and had a good time. You know, not certainly for what they've wanted to do. It seems like
Rice is a pain in the ass to me because there's so much drama there.
Well, Risa is the holodeck, right? Every time you go on, it's supposed to be for fun and relaxation.
Right.
But it's going to inevitably screw up or F up, if we can say the F word this time, every time you go.
Yeah, but I mean, Lou, to a certain extent, you know, yeah, millions of people go to Risa, have a great time. And, you know, the four or five times we go to Risa, there's always like hijinks and people not quite getting what they expect. But the alternative is to put a, you know, a couple of 100,000 episodes of hardcore porn onto the Star Trek feed, which I doubt is what they were going for on the network TV.
Well, no, the network wasn't going for it, but we might have. I mean,
well, I mean, there's always justice. I mean, the only thing we didn't see is somebody, you know, ripping off someone's bikini on Justice. But it came pretty darn close. I mean, you know, when you got a man and a woman on out in public making out like they were doing, that's pretty darn close. But the thing about Risa is, yeah, millions of people go there. But from what we've seen, they probably all have a hard time dealing with it. We've never seen anybody that enjoyed themselves on Risa, especially like Worf and Dax. That was one of the most useless episodes of Risa ever.
I like that episode.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why.
You got the protesters that turn off Risa. Oh, God.
I mean, it's silly. I like Worf. Worf Outer Place is good. And
oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's silly nonsense. It's not the greatest episode in the world, clearly.
Right.
But it gets a huge amount of beats, that episode. It's down as, you know, the worst DS9 ever. And I don't see that per se, because at least I can watch that with, you know, certain parts of the brain switched off and not be too offended.
Just the back part of the brain so your eyes can see it. That's all you need.
Maybe it's not quite that. Maybe it's that you can watch the episode and not be bored.
Yeah. Well, when we get to Lower Pylon 2, we'll talk about it. Wouldn't it be funny if that's what we actually called it, Lower Pylon 2?
Well, Lower Pylon 4, I thought, is what we were going
for. Well, I kept calling it 3.
It was 3. I thought it was Lower Pylon 3, but maybe I've just got confused recently.
No, because we're always going to be under the Upper Pylon 2. So, but okay, so anyway, and then we go on to Captain Archer, and I couldn't stand the dog. I love Porthos, but her dog sucked. But anyway, so here we are at Risa, and we got two Vorgons that are about to bust Captain Picard's holiday. They beam down, and they ask the directory, "Hey, where's Captain Picard staying?" "Sorry, there's no Captain Picard. First of all, they're terrible time travelers," which, by the way, they are, because they didn't know when to appear on Risa. What do you guys think about that? Terrible time travelers.
Time travel always throws me off. Doctor, explain time travel to me.
Here we go, guys. Let me see if I can put it in this time.
Get your books out, kids, because Dr. Roberts is about to school ya.
Go, Doc.
Well, I tell my kids, kids always come up to me and say, oh, I know, I want a time machine. And I tell them, I said, look, dude, you have a time machine. Go up to your bedroom, get into bed, put your head on the pillow, and in a little while, it'll be tomorrow. And that's really the best you're going to get out of time travel, right? All you can do is you can go forward. So in terms of time travel backwards, it doesn't really work. But one thing in this episode in particular, are these people legitimately time travelers? Because a note that I had is that I thought that Picard kind of trusted these guys, you know, later on in the episode. They kind of turn up and go, hey, we're time travelers. We want your things. I said, okay. And he seemed to be very almost happy to accept that. And I didn't know whether or not we were supposed to believe that these were possibly con men or whether they were legitimate time travelers from the 27th century or whatever it is. And when when they start being challenged, they get very defensive. Yeah. And then when Picard does what he was going to do, they kind of walk out with, frankly, the best thing you can say as a time traveler, which is, thank you. You've fulfilled your destiny and you've just wandered off in the opposite direction. It gives you the greatest excuse to leave a party or to leave an event at whatever time you wish. You just say you've fulfilled your destiny. You just walk off in the opposite direction. So I found those two guys.
So you think they were full of it? They weren't really time travelers?
I saw no evidence of time traveling. I mean, I seem to... maybe I actually got this episode confused with another episode. I thought these guys were also con men. Okay. And I think one episode in DS9, there's another similar situation where there's like a heist and people go after the same thing. And it turns out that, you know, there was a front that they had put on. So when I started watching this, I thought, oh, these guys aren't time travelers really, right? They're just pretending to be time travelers. But the episode doesn't answer that question.
No, it doesn't. Okay. All right. Well.
I'm still lost. But I love these guys. I mean, I don't love these guys, sorry. I think that the storyline is interesting with them trying to get the thing and the girl. I love Vash. I'm a huge fan of Vash. I like when she shows back up in DS9. I think she is really cool in an Indiana Jones sort of way. Like, I have all these fantasies of her, like, doing crazy, crazy things and getting all kinds of incredible loot all across the galaxy. So, yeah. I just love the premise here. I think it's established well. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So it's time.
We'll see it unravels. Yeah. Well. I think Dr. James already kind of revealed that he doesn't think it unravels well, but I think that the initial idea here is good.
Hmm. No, I am. If they had, we know that Picard's into archaeology, right? And I actually also agree. I think the Vash character is great. I think that it is. Let me just first of all concentrate on the actress. She plays her very well. I think she's very good. She has good chemistry on the episode with Patrick Stewart. I think she does very well at delivering everything she needs to deliver. I think she's, you know, a good portrayal of that Vash character. You kind of think that she's on your side, but she's also got a mischievous edge. You don't quite, you know, fully buy into it. She's kind of roguish as well at the same time. So I love that. And I also think in Q-less as well, when she comes to DS9, it's also good. I think Vash is kind of like a perfect, you know, a perfect companion for Picard in the sense that, you know, they've got the interest in archaeology. You could easily see him and her going off on these kind of crazy adventures. And, you know, he might think that she's been too risky. And there's a lot of perhaps good stuff there to mine. I thought this episode didn't quite do it that well, but if they wanted this character in the background and, you know, for every now and again for Picard and her to meet up for some hijinks, then I would have been on board with that. I think that's
fine. I can see that.
I wish they had done that. That would have been really cool. And then, I mean, even having her show up on subsequent series, I could totally see her just randomly being out in the Delta Quadrant, for instance. Like,
with Q.
I think you could do that. Maybe with Q, or maybe just randomly out there. Like, some, who knows? They can make up any technobabble reason why she got out there. She found a portal, a stargate to some weird planet out there. I don't know. But she's the type of character you could send almost anywhere. And she have her show up in random places and be interesting. Yeah. But not everybody loves her like I do.
Yeah, Janeway met up with Cole and Erador. Why couldn't she meet up with Vash?
Mm.
So, Janeway met up with who?
Dr. Erador and Cole, the Ferengi.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure. So, when you put those names together, I thought there was first name, surname. Oh. Someone, who's that?
I mean, that was a good callback to TNG. So, why not put Vash out there, too?
Okay, hang on. About the False Prophets episode. Really? Was it really a good callback? I remember that episode being painful. Also, I was just very confused as to why Neelix, who would never have met a Ferengi in his entire life, would have been the guy that you put in Ferengi makeup to go down and to convince them that, you know, that they had to return home or whatever the kind of, you know, the escapade of the day was.
Yeah, the briefing would have been very long. No, no, no. You don't talk like that. You gotta talk like this. You're right. But I think it was still a nice callback. I mean, you wouldn't have expected them at all. And here they just pop up. Greed is eternal. So I like the callback. Yeah, the episode could have been a little better, but.
Oh, no. So I agree with that. I'm generally a big sucker for continuity.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily even mean that there has to be a developed plot line. I just mean that every now and again, for someone to refer to something from the past, it's always good.
Okay, so anyway, about the Vorgons. I mean, yeah, there may be some question as to whether they were really time travelers, but then, you know, why would they have ended up on Ryza? Nobody had even thought about sending Picard to Ryza. So, but they're there at the beginning of this episode looking for the lodging chambers. Oh, he's not here? Well, when will he be here? Because we know he is going to be here. So how would they have had that if they're not time travelers?
Well, if they're... Oh, they're not
time travelers? No, that's what I'm saying. If they're not, how would they have had that information?
Seems like a dark question.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it matters. Anyway, so my two first points that I was going to, that are on my notes that we haven't mentioned is there no privacy on Ryza? So can anyone just turn up anywhere on Ryza and say, hey, is there a Jean-Luc Picard on this planet? And he said, no, not yet. When's he scheduled to arrive? No, we don't know. Not heard of him. So I found that a little bit weird. Even if people come up to my hotel, I wouldn't expect people to be immediately directed to my room. And then, Lou, when you mentioned it, that they, you know, when they kind of like assert that he will come, you know, they're obviously wrong to begin with, right? Because they've not landed correct on this right spot. How long did they wait in the lobby for? What, like a day? 6 weeks? I mean, how long are these guys actually going to stand there and wait?
Yeah, how long did Nero circle around Vulcan or something?
At a certain point, I think they're going to be thrown out of the lobby and,
yeah,
you know, and they'll have to live on the streets.
That's a good question. Who pays for the room? I mean, do you pay for the room? How do you pay for the room? There's no money in the future.
I have no idea.
And the guy who sells the Horgons, do you consider him a pimp?
No. Was he selling people and their services?
No, you get a Horgon. And then with the Horgon comes...
Horgon, pimp. Wow. Sorry. Woo! Good job, Lou. But,
okay, I wasn't even thinking that. I'm still thinking that, you know, when Wrecker says, make sure you bring me back a Horgon.
Well, yeah, but a Horgon isn't like a token or anything like that. You don't exchange your Horgon for a session of Jamaharon, do you?
Well, no, but that signifies that you want Jamaharon. And
it's like an eat as much as you'd like invitation to the buffet. You buy the Horgon and you can have as much Jerahamon as you can.
So essentially, take. Riker was telling him to get him this so that he would have it around so that some woman would see it and try to give Picard Jamaharon.
Right.
And hang on. One thing I really don't like about this episode. We're expected to, you know, this episode really is bad in this respect. We expect to believe that Riker doesn't have his own Horgon. I mean, surely he must have at least a collection under his bed.
Oh, sure. He might have one or two, but he doesn't have one that Picard has ever seen.
No. No.
And he was just telling him this so that he would get Picard to have one so that Picard would be approached by some women.
Ah,
I don't think that makes it a bad episode. I think this is Riker being the ultimate bro and trying to help out his dude and get him a little stress relief, if you know what I'm saying, Doc.
No, I'm just being slightly facetious when I say it's bad because of that. So so you actually do think that you do think Riker was knowingly sitting in there I'm in the market for Jamaharon specifically.
Yeah, I think
so he would get
I don't.
I think I saw the twinkle in Riker's eye.
I think Riker knew he probably wouldn't have done it, but it would have been interesting to see him in that situation try and backpedal what the Horgon means. I mean, because obviously he got rid of it as soon as the woman walked away.
So I think Riker knew it was going to put him in a uncomfortable position that would have been fun for him to see on, like, a secret venue or something.
Yeah, do you think Riker's watching him from up in the, like, that's what I want to see. I want to see Riker watching America's Funniest Home Picard. You know, like, just sitting up there with the view screen, like, oh, he bought it. He bought it. Oh, my God. Here he goes. He's sitting down with it next to him.
That's the thing, because he does go to, like, you know, the open air resort. I don't think the Enterprise ever left orbit. They just hovered above and they watched. Mm-hmm.
They all watched the Captain's Holiday.
Uh huh.
They're on the same trip that we're on.
Absolutely. So, what do you guys think of the plot that the entire crew hatches, except for a lonely ensign on deck? Wait, whatever.
Wait, before we move on, I have to talk about the really important thing. Did anybody else love the character design of the Vorgons?
No.
You hated it, Doc?
You never see these guys again. You never see anyone that looks like these guys again.
You're right.
I generally get the impression then that it didn't go down too well.
They kind of reminded me of, like, a volcano. Like, their little heads are volcanoes.
Uh-huh.
And their outfits kind of mirror the way that their head stair steps up on itself, and they got all these purple lines. I have the action figure, and I think it's fantastic. I think they're fantastic. I love the Vorgons in, like, a strange Coneheads type of way.
Coneheads is a very good call.
Yeah.
They did seem like that. The thing I got, I felt sorry for them because... You know, whilst everyone else is at Riser, everyone looks vaguely kind of humanoidish. And I mean, you know, human or worse, you know, from Southern California. Whereas you never saw those guys seeking Gemma Haran on the sunbeds.
Oh.
So it looked like they would not be able to enjoy themselves as much as you know, the other humans and the other aliens.
No, I mean, the woman Vorgon looks like she's got a permanent frown on her neck. I don't know if you ever noticed that one. It's like her neck could open up and be a second mouth.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's a permanent frown. Okay. So, now can we go on to everybody plotting and scheming?
I'm sad that you guys didn't love their outfits and their... I would totally dress up as a Vorgon for the next comic Star Trek-a-con.
Well.
yeah. Well, I'll be going personally as Vash, so
nice.
We can make a thing of it.
We could have a. You're gonna go as Vash. I never took you for that, Doc. I never took you for the Rocky Horror Picture Show type. You know, like that's nice. I'm glad for you.
It's more feminine side.
I mean, it's helped you produce 5 children in the world, so that's positive. So even Jefferson couldn't say you were doing a bad thing, right?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. You know, Jefferson is not big on the on anything that's anti-man and woman and making babies. And anyway, sorry, let's keep going.
You mean Gemma Haran. Okay.
No, Gemma Haran.
No. Wouldn't you love to have a name, Ron? Jamaha Ron. So everybody's plotting, except for the lonely ensign on deck, whatever, to get Picard on vacation because he just got done with very, very difficult mediation. Too bad we didn't see that, huh?
To be honest with you, they should have linked it into the previous episode.
Yeah.
So that it would, you know, would more naturally follow, because I always get the impression that the episodes, you know, continually have, you know, 26 episodes a year, and a year in Trek is a year in, like, real life. Uh-huh. It's kind of like 2 weeks. So I would have preferred had they referred to, like, previous episodes, and or even, you know, at the end of the last episode, they say, well, now we're going into the 10th negotiations with race such and such, and then start this episode saying, well, those were a pain in the backside. I need a holiday. It would have been a little bit nicer.
So he went through hell to eradicate the Firefox plague. Then he got abducted. He just needs a break. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that flows very nicely from last week.
I agree. Captain, somebody is neglecting his health again. Oh, yeah? Who's that?
Well,
this is what's happening. I mean, I thought that scene was pretty good. You know, he's a little crotchety. He's arrogant. Muscle spasms. You know, I mean, she's making this stuff up as he goes along, and he gets on like that. As soon as he grabs his neck and she says, muscle spasms. He's like, oh, no, no. But it works. They end up getting him to go on holiday. Where's the other planet that they could have gone besides Ryza? Wasn't there another one?
Not sure.
Yeah.
I thought there was another.
I would imagine, though, you could take shore leave at a lot of different planets.
Yeah.
Like, I think about that. Even with our planet here, like, in South Carolina, there are about 100 different little places I could go out in the country and just go to a bed and breakfast and, like, go ride horses or see different things. I don't understand why Picard would choose Ryza, because Ryza always seemed like a hedonistic, like, sex planet to me. And I would imagine that his perfect holiday, as he says early on in this episode, is just kind of relaxing, sitting back and reading. Like, I imagine him being at Kirk's house from Generations, you know, in the Nexus. Like, he's there without Kirk there, obviously. And he's reading his book, and occasionally he'll go out and ride a horse or whatever else, or he might go on an archaeological dig at some site that's nearby, maybe, or delve into a cave. Like, I don't imagine Picard loving this place. But I think that's part of what I like about this episode is that it's Picard. Like we mentioned earlier, Worf kind of being out of place. We love the Worf out of place episodes. I like Picard being in those types of situations as well, because I think that he plays it well. I think that his blustery, you know, how dare you face is fantastic. And I don't know. I love him here. But I don't know why they would have chose this planet for Picard. Or why he would have chosen.
The strange thing is, though, is that in this episode, you're given the impression that this is a small, out-of-the-way planet that not many people know about. Certainly when Riker presents it as Ryza, it's not, you know, it's not as if people know of the planet. It's only later in Trek that when people say Ryza, everyone knows, oh, you mean the sex planet. And it's a bit weird, right? I think that it's... In watching back this episode, like you kind of, you're given the impression that not a lot of people know about Ryza, per se. But
But I think this episode defines it as the sex planet, right? Like, the episodes in the future just look back and they say, oh, that was that sex planet. And so it just became kind of a writing joke, maybe, or something like that. But yeah, I can see what you mean as far as this planet maybe being out of the way and quiet and all that stuff. And I would imagine that the pleasure planet would not just be for sexual pleasure, but for whatever pleases you. So you could get a suite that would be perfect for you, or you could get into the section where maybe you're not into sex, maybe you're into playing checkers. We have a section for that because that's your pleasure. So a true pleasure planet, I think, would be more facilitating than just a sex planet. As this kind of becomes,
yeah. Let me also just take 1 minute to have a go at Crusher here, because when first of all, when she comes along and says, "Oh, her crew member is neglecting herself," I mean, this is just lifted out of Shore Leave, right, from TOS, where Spock does the same thing to Kirk, but in that case, Kirk falls for it. Whereas I think throughout this episode, as Picard's being badgered, he's kind of one step ahead of the crew, and he doesn't leave because people convince him he should leave. He leaves in order not to be bothered going forward. But I kind of thought that some of Picard's suggestions that, oh, I'm going to go to this conference on such and such that is interesting to me. If I were a crush, I would have said, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Go. I don't know why she was then sitting there saying, well, you don't want to go to a conference. You should go to a place sit on the beach. She came across as a bit, you know, poo-pooing other people's idea of a perfect holiday.
Right.
I'd love to go to a conference.
Yeah, because sometimes you could just be on yourself, by yourself. And even sometimes just being alone in the hotel is better than being in the cramped house.
Well, and one of the best vacations I've had recently, you know, being a teacher, was actually to a a conference, and basically we sat there all day and we learned about how people learn and we learned about the brain and all that stuff. But that stuff really turns me on, I guess, you know, not turns me on in the sexual way, but turns me on in that my brain gets engaged. I'm fully interested. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that there were nice hors d'oeuvres and drinks at the end of every conference day like that. Yeah, that's nice. But sex and vittles is not the only thing that makes a good holiday.
Sure. You know?
Picard likes to have his brain engaged on his holiday. It's a who's to say that's
wrong?
Yeah,
it's a break in the routine. That's all. Yeah, okay. But you...
With that said, I love Beverly Crusher, and I will not have you maligning her good name, Doctor. Yeah.
Maybe she should have went with him.
See, that's... Yeah, I wanted to make that joke earlier when he first said, I'm going to give Beverly her deal. I'm like, well, she just wanted to go with him. She wanted to go to the sex pleasure planet with him, and somebody nixed it. You know, somebody didn't approve of her shore leave during the same time.
Yeah, because her and Vash could have gotten in a cat fight for Picard.
Could it have been like the WWE cat fights? Like, could there have been like a blow-up pool full of pudding like right behind them and they just end up in it somehow? Okay, and there's a whole lot of just blustery.
I'll guarantee that there's fan fiction about this episode when Beverly came along as well. I'm certain that's out there.
Someone has written that, and I'm sure that it's very smutty.
Okay. So what do we think of Silvac versus Rom?
Rom's way better.
Yeah. But. So what do we think of Rom being convinced that Nog needs to go to school, or Rom the blustering idiot? Because remember, I know we're talking DS9 here, but Rom in the beginning was very intelligent.
No, yeah, I got
little you. Lady, little lady, talking. Little lady, if only you understood what it was like to be a Ferengi. It was not I don't know.
I don't know if I would have called him very intelligent, but he was certainly more Ferengi-ish than he becomes in later seasons.
Yeah.
I still think he was a waiter, so therefore that proves he didn't have, you know, the lobes for business.
Right.
If we're using the parlance of the race. But I think that this is... I think that Rom later is much more palatable. Yes. Rom at the beginning would be more true to what he should have probably stayed as, with some slight character deviation stuff. But, you know, what is it?
Right. And I find it interesting that in TNG, in the first three seasons, we have the guy who plays Quark in...
he came in as an early Ferengi.
Yeah, he's one of the earlier Ferengis. Now, Max is here for Silvac. And they both wind up in DS9. So,
I mean, they were good, and they didn't mind the makeup, I guess.
No. But, I think Silvac was a little interesting in this one. You say you don't know her. I don't, and I don't want to, but he sure gets to know her. Yeah. Do you think he took his Horgon on their expedition?
Yes, and I think he got his lobes rubbed.
Yes. But yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. I wonder if Picard, because Picard never presents to Riker the Horgon, do you think he just, like, burned it or got rid of it, or do you think he brought it back and gave it to him off screen?
No, I think he realized what Riker was doing there, and he had a good chuckle. But, you know, if you know anything about the brohood, you don't sell the joke. So if your buddy gets you with a rib, you don't ever sell it. You know, so I would imagine that he handed it off to some poor lucky schlub on the planet who couldn't afford one himself. Picard was like, "Here, take this," and the guy takes it, and he got a little what was it, Chamaharad?
Lucky him, huh?
Yeah, lucky guy. Picard is good like that, though. He's a saint, really.
You know, I did a little search here while we were talking, and. For $250 plus $18.75 shipping, we could get a replica of the Horgon.
I think you could probably get it.
I'm sure somewhere. But can you imagine taking that to work and setting it on your desk? Oh no, as a teacher, that'd be your short list of getting fired. But
yeah, that'd be inappropriate. No.
But I mean, let's say you're in an office setting and you just happen to set that up on a counter somewhere. Wouldn't it have been fun to have people ask you what that's for? It's just for good luck.
Actually, Lou, I have a Chinese dragon that I keep on my desk. It's a wooden Chinese dragon that I actually bought for $8.95 at what they call a flea market in Kentucky. So I'm sure, Lou, that you can find this for a lot cheaper than $250.
I hope so. I would imagine.
Lou, when you were sitting there and you said, I've been Googling and I've managed you can find for $250, I thought you were getting in another direction, I'm afraid. Because that does sound expensive for the little model.
It does, but it's from ecrater.com.
Ecrater.
Ecrater.
It'll create a crater in your wallet, as it turns
out. Yes, it would. It would. Okay. So Picard shows up, and already before he even gets the Horgon, he gets a little bit of Jamaharan, doesn't he? I mean, big old smooch from Vash.
We don't know what Jamaharan is.
We don't.
We don't. I mean, it's kind of, you can infer bits and pieces, but you don't quite know what it is, right?
No, we don't. It could just be a knight on the town. Or,
a firm handshake.
Thank you for that, Jamaharan. But, I mean, this has never happened to me. And I have to wonder if it's ever happened to you. You know, you arrive at this hotel and some woman throws her arms around your neck and kisses you. I mean, don't you just get tired of that after a while?
I don't know. Never had it happen, so I can't say if...
Well, Doctor, I'm sure that this has had to... The laws of probability state that out of all of us on this call, one of us has had to have had that happen, and Doc, it has to be you, apparently. Does it get old?
Pardon me?
To have some woman... throw her arms around you in a hotel and...
I could imagine it gets old very quickly, but it has not happened to me yet.
Boy.
Has not happened to you that a woman kissing you gets old to you? Is that what you're saying?
Or a woman you don't know in a hotel lobby that you just arrived, haven't even had a chance to check in, and you've got some woman throwing herself on you. Never happened, huh?
Never happened. Never happened.
Never happened. Anybody? Nope. Anybody, in the forum, could you tell us if it happened? Kieran, it's got to have happened to you.
Yeah, having met Kieran recently, not met him face-to-face, but seen him, I'm pretty sure it happened to Kieran. It's definitely happened to Kieran.
We're going to get to talk to Kieran next show.
I'm staying on, then. I'm not leaving.
Kieran and Colin. I don't remember how that happened, because we generally like to have one per show. I don't know how that happened.
Well, now you're going to have three.
That'd be fun. Five on the call. We all have to put our cameras on and put our hands up. Let the teacher tell us. Okay, Lou, you talk now. Okay. Colin, your turn.
It's not that bad, Lou. We do five fairly regularly, and it ends up not being that bad. You know some of those lulls you have where you say something and nobody has anything to say? That fourth or fifth person
saves the day.
They might dig right in on that and go to it. Now, you do have to be a little more pushy when you actually have a valid point that needs to be made. But, yeah.
Right. Okay, so I guess we can go past the fact that no one's ever... throwing their arms around you and kiss you while you're checking into a hotel.
Yeah, it usually takes 2 or 3 days for a woman to warm up to me. And I don't know about this because it's been about 10, 15 years since I've had that not 10, 15. It's been 10 years total since I've had to have that kind of thing happen to me, but I have a woman who every day kisses me now and throws her arms around me when I walk in the door, but I'm not tired of it yet. So
no, absolutely not. I have two women who greet me with kisses when I enter the door. My wife and my dog. My daughter wants nothing to do with that type of stuff. But I also have one male who greets me with warm kisses, too. That's my squirrel. Okay, so then if that's never happened to you, surely you guys have been sitting in the beach chair enjoying a good book and had a ball bouncing around your face, right?
This has happened.
Yes.
It's annoying.
Having that ball sticking around and, you know, he tries to grab it and the woman pulls it back and then offers Jamaharan.
And so the question there is, how do you respond? Is it a, yeah, let's go? Or is it a, eh, not really interested?
Well, my guess is in the 24th century, all STDs have been eliminated, right?
Not sure, Lou. Not sure.
You never know. You never know.
There's some alien STDs you may not have come in contact with. Yes, sir.
That is so true. And besides, you have to have medical clearance for that anyway. Oh, bring it back to time travel thing. I think one of the funniest instances of time travel discussion that I've seen on TV has got to be the first episode of Big Bang Theory, when Sheldon has Leonard signing this roommate agreement. And one of the agreements he had to sign was, if either of us invent time travel, we agree that we will go back in time to this meeting right here in 30 seconds to meet up with us again, right? And so he signs the agreement, and for the next 30 seconds, they just kind of look around for their future selves to show up. And when no one ever shows up, they go, well, that was disappointing. So I thought that was one of the funnier time travel mentions in TV. So you guys got anything better?
I have not ever watched that show, but that sounds actually pretty funny and clever. I've heard a lot of people hate on that show, and I've never had an opportunity to watch it because it's not on any streaming devices, which is not very smart, Big Bang Theory, if you want people who don't like cable to actually watch your show. Sorry, that was a tangent.
Haters.
But I think that's a great joke. I think that's funny.
I love that show. I think it's funny. They're starting to, right now, they're in their like 8th or 9th season. And I think the jokes are starting to wear thin, and the situations are starting to wear a little thin as they start to marry them off. So they go from hopeless nerds to married men. I don't know. It's a direction I wish they hadn't gone into. But so Jamaharan, she comes back.
I went from hopeless nerd to married man a decade and a half ago. And I agree. I mean, it's been downhill ever since.
I went from hopeless man to married nerd.
Hey, that's so good.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, absolutely. So we find out what Jamaharan really is, and he tosses that Horgon under his towel. And then we have...
Wait a second.
Sovak.
So you just said Jamaharan and tosses that under a towel in the
same
sentence.
Oh, did I say Jamaharan? Tosses his Horgon under his towel.
Maybe you said Horgon. Tossing it. I don't have any clue at this point.
When the whore was gone, he got rid of the Horgon.
Tosses it under the towel. I heard something... Yeah. That had to do with Jamaharan or horrors being gone and things being tossed under a towel. And sorry.
Yeah, everyone, if you missed it, just rewind and listen to it again.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Horgons, towels. Moving on.
Horgon, towel. Sovak. Listen to what I'm saying. I have no idea who the woman is. Shut up. I don't know. The story seems a little boring to me, to be honest. Doc? Do you agree?
Actually, no. At this point, I think it's fine. I mean, I think that the beginning is a little bit stretched in terms of getting the card off the Enterprise. And to be honest with you, I think that you could have done without this kind of, you know, subterfuge of, oh, you know, Laxana Troy's turning up and you wouldn't you want to run away. I think there are attempts at comedy, but I don't actually think it's that great. I think as long as you get, you know, while you're down on the planet and the initial bit of him, you know, unexpectedly seeking Jamaharon and then having some first conversation with Vash and getting involved with the Ferengi, I actually don't mind it at this point.
Yeah.
And I think that it's, you know, they're about to, when they get to the point where they pack their bags and they head off on their hike, I think this is kind of the peak of the episode in my mind.
Okay. I don't know if I should be asking two different men this question, but what do you think of Picard's tight speedos?
Oh, sexy, man. I mean, look, I'm very sure of my masculinity. I have four children. I love my wife to death. Picard is a good-looking man, and he looks good here, so I don't feel bad saying it.
All right, but he goes back to his room to find out it's been broken into, and the suspects are still there scanning the room, probably looking for that Horgon. Nope.
We're all looking for the Horgon.
We all want the Horgon. We want that Horgon. Anyway, but they were looking for the Tox Utat. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, that's right.
Piece of crystal that anyone could have made at any time. What in the hell does a Tox Utat really do? Did we really establish that?
They said it would like stop nuclear fusion within a star. I think that was thrown out. But
which would mean that it could have completely ruined J.J. Abrams' plot for 2009. Right?
Could have.
Doc, is that right? I mean, was it fusion that caused the eruption that killed the planet?
Oh, no. That was just a supernova. I suppose had you got it before it supernova, then maybe. But you probably, at the point where the supernova takes place, you're generally not relying on, I suspect you're not relying on fusion anymore. And it's just a propagation of an explosion. By that point, it's not the explosion. The explosion has occurred. You're just looking at the shockwave going out.
Mm.
But there's no way a supernova would threaten the galaxy, by the way. I mean, that's ridiculous. In fact, it's extremely unlikely that a supernova would ever get out of the solar system that it occurred in. But that's a separate issue.
I don't come into these episodes with any list of things that I'm going to get you guys to go off on a tangent about. Right. But I feel like every episode I'm on with you guys, that's kind of the thing. That's what I bring. I bring lots of small tangents onto other Star Trek that we can all go on. And I appreciate you guys for going on them with me.
The one thing I thought was really weird about the Tox Utat is that, you know, from these quote-unquote time travelers' perspective, they say, we were guarding it, it got stolen, and then we thought, well, what do we do now? And it sounded to me is that they went to the library and went through historical documents to see whether or not anyone had referenced it in fairy tales and stuff. And it's almost as if, you know, a dude's guarding a particular, you know, sacred crown, it gets stolen, and then he goes into the library and then thinks, oh, perhaps it was the King of Sweden, perhaps he has my crown, and he goes back and visits him. To me, it didn't seem the natural course of investigation to be looking at historic documents.
No, because I highly doubt that Picard made a full log about his encounter on Ryza with the Tox Utat. He destroys it.
And what would the log say? Oh, today I discovered the Tox Utat, and these people from the future came back and they told me that I was going to find it. I mean, it would be very self-referential as well, right?
Right. It'd have to be a personal log because Starfleet would be pissed that he destroyed it.
I mean, what it is, by the way, Lou, and you'll like this, when these guys have it stolen from them, effectively what they do is they do that scene in Spaceballs where they try to figure out what happens next by watching the film. That's what they're trying to do.
Right. Yes. That would have been fun, but of course Star Trek can't refer to itself like Spaceballs does. Everybody got that? Good. I don't know. But he just, you know, they find it and they destroy it. But anyway, where were we at? The Vorgons in Picard's suite scanning it. What the hell are you doing here? And they tell him the whole story. Do you think it seems like Picard buys it. He buys into the story and he plays. But to me, it feels like he plays along because it's the only way to get rid of them. And, you know, let me handle this. Wink, wink. I'll get you that Utap because obviously it belongs to you. Did you think he was just playing along, or do you think he fell for it? He drank the Kool-Aid.
You know, I'm not sure because I think throughout this episode you seem to think that Picard's a little bit slow and he's buying into this stuff. But then a little bit later, it's clear that he's just playing along. So things with the Crusher and things with Troy at the beginning, you know, to begin with, you think, oh, he's fallen for the fact that, you know, Troy's mom's coming on board and he wants to get out. But it's clear that that's not really true. So I thought throughout the episode, he appears to be buying into these time travelers. And then in the end, he does question them a little bit more vigorously. But I don't know. It is kind of left open to an extent. And it's left more open than they would usually have been, because often, right, they would have been, I mean, they could have very easily had a conversation between Picard and Bash, or, you know, Picard and, you know, and himself, and just say, well, I don't think I trust these guys. They've not shown me any evidence. But they choose not to do that. So they leave it deliberately, you know, open.
Okay. Chris, anything?
Nah, nothing on that.
Okay. What do you think of their ear transporter?
Freaking awesome.
It is good. It's just a clip to the ear and beam up. Or beam into the future or whatever.
Beam wherever. They probably got another room in the hotel. They're probably staying under Mr. and Mrs. Vorgon. Because to me, that looked like a female and a male, didn't it?
It was supposed to be a female and a male, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I assume so. I assume they had two children waiting back in the back, and that their spaceship looked kind of like a station wagon.
Yeah, there you go. But then we didn't talk about this disc yet. Give me the disc! She has the disc. He doesn't. She gave him, Picard, the disc. Who goes to return it to its rightful owner? Are you missing something? Turns out, her room was busted into as well. Most likely by Sovak, who was looking for the disc. Yeah? No?
Then this is true. It all happened.
Yep, it all happened. I saw it. So, they look at the disc, I suppose. They get the directions to where the Tox Utat is buried, and it's time to get Dora the Explorer going.
What?
Dora. She even has backpack.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah.
backpack. Yay!
Delicioso!
Yes. We need map. Boat. Sand. Anyway. So they arrive to the cave.
I was trying so hard to come up with the Spanish versions of those words you were just saying, but I don't know.
Well, we could use Google Translate if we needed to. I wonder why they didn't call it Google Universal Translator.
Because they're not true Star Trek fans. Even though they have Klingon. Don't they have Klingon in their translate thing? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I could check if you'd like. But they arrive in the cave and, you know, they're going to take a nap before they start digging for the Utat. And that's when things start to happen. And the Vorgon works its magic, apparently.
Was anyone else uncomfortable with the cave scene when these two... You know, there's actually been... I think there's been pretty good chemistry between Vash and Picard throughout. And I thought that they would have been better to have it unresolved for the entire episode, because then it allows you to go back to the well next time and then back again. And I thought that the fact that they seemed to get down to Nookie pretty quickly, I thought it just did the episode a little bit of the disservice. And in particular, I think it did the episode, the Vash character a disservice.
How much of that is your 21st century mores kind of playing upon that interaction? Because I would assume that in the 24th century that sex is not the taboo thing that it is today. That it's a thing that two consenting adults do for enjoyment, and there's not a lot of Judeo-Christian values kind of pushed upon it. Because that's kind of how they present it to us in everything they present to us, like all their shows.
The thing is that I'm not actually referring to it in the sense of kind of like an ethical standard, and certainly not from a kind of like a religious aspect, but more from a, you know, Vash clearly has a certain amount of power over Picard. And I think that after their night in the cave, she probably has a little bit less power over Picard. I'll put it that way.
But again, I think that goes back to the I don't know. I can see what you're saying, like the psychological power over him with the power of her femininity over his masculinity or whatever. But I don't know that that's a thing. Like, even today, that's being questioned. Like, the structure of women using their sexual organs as power over men, like, that's already being questioned. I just don't know that that's a question in the future, or that that's a thing for them.
All right.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is, but
no, I'm certain Picard wanted Nookie in the same way that Bashir wanted Nookie from Dax, and when Dax died, you had people lining up going onto a vengeance quest who weren't, you know, when Worf was going on and he got angry about it, that these guys were, you know, merely, you know, pining over her from a separate room. And I think there's clearly still that infatuation. And I would have thought that you could have been a little bit, you didn't have to resolve it in this one episode. It's maybe what I was after.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. Like, as a story element, I wish that she had cropped up more, and maybe if she hadn't have, maybe if they hadn't consummated the relationship in this episode, it would have gone forward and she would have come back a few times in TNG. Or she came up one time, right? She comes up with a Q episode later.
Yeah, she's in Cupid.
But that's it. But maybe she would have come up a few more times, and that could have been a whole episode.
The Robin Hood episode, right?
That Robin Hood episode.
Yeah.
Pristine. If you don't have me on for that one, I don't know what you guys are doing. But yeah, I could see what you're saying, Doc, but I think at the same time, you could still have her back whether or not they had consummated here or not. Like, I don't know that she actually has any power over him with her sexual organs. I think that's all constructed. And maybe it's constructed within the show, but I think it's based off of some archaic things.
And you don't necessarily even need to have the captain kind of falling at her feet. You can just have her believing that that's what she's playing, and
right.
effectively, you know, allowing that to be played out for him to be kind of kept close, and, you know, and that's a bit of a double bluff. But I kind of thought that that's what they were going for anyway, and the fact that they'd resolved it was, you know, my only issue.
Okay. So what do we think of Picard the Blanket Hogger?
I think that's about right. He's a captain in every way. You know, he's going to hog the blanket. He's got to be in control.
And they have a discussion about how they're both having a terrible time. You know, we're having a if you want to say we're having a terrible time, we're having a terrible time. Whatever. So after Picard does the Horgon.
gets the Horgon, you mean.
Gets the Horgon and does the Horgon.
Wait a second. That implies that Vash is an untoward lady, and I don't know that I like that. I think Vash is a... Let's not slut shame, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know enough about it.
Let's not slut shame Vash at this point.
Yeah, I suppose. She's just in for profit. She's pretty much a Ferengi, really, if you think about it.
She does have some definite Ferengi values.
Oh, yeah. She out-Ferengis a Ferengi. So what do you guys think of these portable shovels that they have? Very, very little shovel that they get on a long stick. It just seems like it wouldn't... I don't know. To me, it's not much of a shovel. I think they go for futuristic over versatility or usage.
Certainly, yeah. It's not...
They do that a lot. They do that with like things like cups and you know, any everyday thing you can identify as being, oh, that looks like what we have now.
Right.
It to a certain extent, if the audience see it and they say, well, that's what we have now, it kind of like breaks them out of the episode. But there are certain things that we have now that are appropriate, right? Like a ball is a ball. You don't need to make a ball flashing with light and paint it silver. And I doubt that's what's going to happen in the next 200 years. And I think the same thing with the shovel. The shovel's a shovel, and it's kind of like, you know, it's reached the apex of the evolution of the shovel, and it's not going backwards to be turned into a small shovel on the long stick.
On your ball illusion, though, there, Doc,
do you
think when the ball was created and they were maybe wooden or some other thing, that anybody ever thought that we would paint them, you know, in tie-dye colors, bright tie-dye colors, and place the face of a mouse on them in the future?
Sure, but there's a certain trope, right, that you put onto things that are quite futuristic, and right. It's very at a certain point you obviously see that the quote unquote futuristic looking one is clearly inferior to the one that you currently have, and I think like flashlights in the future often fall into that category.
I don't know. I like the Palm Beacon. I don't think I've ever seen anything as bright as the Palm Beacon. But the one thing I don't like of the, I think I know what you're talking about, Doc, like the forks. Yeah. They have straight forks with two prongs. It almost seems like
which we have currently.
Two-prong straight forks?
Yeah, they're out there. You can go buy one right now from
I suppose you could,
random stores, but they're worthless. They're like good for holding meat down while you cut it. That's it.
Yeah. Okay, so they didn't find the Horgon, or they didn't find the Tox Utat in the cave, although they dug forever with those little tiny shovels to make that big of a hole.
They didn't dig further. They dug for about a half hour, right?
Well, but do you see the big hole they were standing in?
But hang on, I thought the hole they were standing in was about 2 foot deep.
Oh, no. I don't think it, no. Let's see here.
It was no Stanley Yelnats hole, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, it seemed to go up to Vasha's waist, a little bit above it. So, I mean...
What's he, like 5'10"?
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is that little tiny shovel that, you know, created that hole, it had to be a while. It's not like they got some backhoe in there.
But it seemed strange that anyone on an archaeological dig would give up within a 12-hour window. With a single, you know, with a couple of people digging with their little spoons, it seemed that was a bit weird. Or I know why they do it, because it's very difficult not to do it, not to have it play out that way, but it seemed a bit strange.
Right. But they couldn't find it, so they go back to her room and, you know, tucks her in for the night and leaves. But then that's when Riker shows up. Hi, Captain, how you doing down there?
Been watching.
Did you get any? No, but he wants transporter code 14. So what exactly do you think transporter code 14 is? What happened to that Tox Utat? Did it get beamed up and in its place was an explosion? Or is transporter code 14 mean blow me up?
I don't think it's very clear. And actually, I think the end of the episode is not really clear as to, you know, a lot of these kind of, I've got notes down that there's a bit of convolution as to how this all plays out. And, you know, person A was supposed to have already got it and then is, you know, doing the bluff and blah, blah, blah. The code 14 thing is odd because I didn't have a memory of how the episode ended. So I thought, well, maybe he's beaming it up and he's making it appear that it explodes, because that seems like a reasonable thing to have as code 14. I think the idea of code 14 being beam me up, but then detonate me halfway through, I doubt many people would call for code 14. I mean, why would you have that use case? And it's also so close to code 15 and code 13 that I would just be just too scared. So I hope it's...
Yeah, you would assume this should be like code Zeta B or, you know, something crazy that means... Or code... What's the final letter in the...
Omega.
In the Greek alphabet? Omega? Yeah, so yeah. Code Omega. Transporter code Omega, which is like we're at the end of this thing's life. It needs to go. It's okay. Atrocious. It can't come back to the ship.
Also, I mean, 14 is so close to 40 as well.
Yeah. It's, there's my code 40. You want this sent to your room, Captain? No, right. 14.
And another thing I never noticed is Vaj is trying to, you know, get away. That they got a bunch of Horgons just sitting on a shelf. So I guess you could just walk up and grab one. Get two or three of them.
So, Lou, what do you think transporter code 69 is?
No.
So as she's trying to get away, Picard stops her because he wasn't happy with his code 69 from last night. And she's trying to get the...
When did you make the unilateral decision that this was no longer a family-friendly podcast?
I didn't ask the question. He did. I don't know. I can't tell him what to do.
You can cut anything you want out of what I say. I don't feel bad if any cuts you make to what I say.
Sometimes. Sometimes. But I know how to use a doo-doo-doo or whatever the noise I pick. Okay, so he's going to hand over the Tox Hutop, but then she mentions, oh no, it was two security officers from the future who were trying to get the Hutop. So he blows it up. But he did make a reference that, you know, they're time travelers. All they have to do is just go back in time and do it again, and that is so true. All they have to do is go back into that spot just before he blows it up.
Well, which is why time travel doesn't make sense, right? And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, argue or say anything about the physics of it. But every now and again, people will say, well, wouldn't it be great to have like a time travel series or something like that? The big problem that you have is that unless it's done extremely tightly and how well it's defined, and actually, to be honest, I thought the temporal Cold War stuff was actually not bad in how they did it. But unless you really define things very tightly, you end up just giving the person that has time travel too much power. Because you can do whatever you like, and what they can do is they can beam out, you know, they can go back in time a nanosecond before something happened and switch it. So right. It almost means that anyone that has time travel has kind of infinite power over everything that has ever happened, which is a little bit difficult to get out of.
Except the Year of Hell kind of showed you the potential awfulness of that, right? Like, and I kind of hated how Year of Hell ended, you know, with it all being happy and we could go back and we could reverse the timeline. But like through that, what it made me think of is that every potential change you make could be ruinous to 100 different things. And I wish that had carried through though, that it had been ruinous and it had ruined certain parts of things, you know, certain people, groups, or whatever else. Like, I could see that Year of Hell thing actually being an entire series. It's just such a cool idea to see how someone messing with the timeline could screw up so much.
No. So let me talk about Year of Hell because.
Oh yeah.
In Year of Hell, you are tightly controlled, right? You are, you know, you set up the story, and then you're told that okay, you can use this magical power, but each time you do, something else might happen elsewhere unexpectedly, and you have no control or no ability to assess ahead of time it with 100% accuracy. And that was what was so great about that episode, because it really put them into a really tightly bound situation that eventually drove the guy mad. And I think the episode actually in Year of Hell is I am certain it's my favorite Voyager episode. I think it's absolutely great.
It's one of
I think it's also up there with kind of one of my favorite Trek episodes, and I'm the issue about whether or not you should have made the Year of Hell a full year, or whether or not you should have reset the way that they did, I don't actually think it's a... I don't think it's a particularly valid criticism of the episode, because the situation that you lived in when Voyager was on at that point was that you couldn't do Year of Hell as a year or 2 year project. It's just that wouldn't have happened. And you arguing about why Year of Hell wasn't a full year, you know, looking back on it now, when you have all these TV shows that do go full years and they do have story arcs, and you know, the television environment has changed. And
well, maybe my timing is off, but wasn't DS9 doing this a year before Year of Hell came out?
Well, okay, so Year
of Hell, they were already doing these storylines that carried forward and moved things. So no, I don't know. Sure. I get what you're saying.
Year of Hell would have been much tighter serialized. It would have been an continuous story arc. Whereas I know DS9 does have the kind of the overtones that carry forward, but it's not in the same league as what you pushed out with Battlestar or what they push out with 24 and, you know, and things that are out nowadays. It's not like a, you know, it's not episode to episode. You have to catch the last 3 minutes of the episode in order to pick up the plot for the following episode. Mm. So I do accept that DS9 was in a bit of a position where it was trying to do this kind of stuff. And also the X-Files was doing a very similar thing where they had the themes carry over, but still maintain slightly episodic setups. I think Year of Hell would have demanded like a year-long storyline similar to the Zindi one. And I just don't think TV and certain network TV wasn't in the position to be able to do that at that time.
Right.
So when you criticize it, I think it's a bit like going back to the 40s and criticizing TV for not being in color.
I'm not criticizing it, by the way. It's one of my favorite episodes as well. I'm just looking at potentiality. That's all I was saying.
And if they want to do this with a new series, and if this is what they want to do, it would be great. But at the time, they wouldn't have been in a good position.
The only thing is that if... had DS9 done the Dominion War and nothing but the Dominion War, it would have been boring after a while.
Which is why you have
all those fillers. Now, having this Year of Hell be a whole Year of Hell, that would have gotten old after a while. A few episodes, a couple episodes, 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 of Anorax or Xanorax or whatever his name was. Yeah, but it would get old.
No, I do think that you do need to keep introducing things in order to keep it fresh. And I fear that one of the things they kind of do with some of the shows, certainly some of the stuff that we watch, they keep kind of hiding stuff until later on in the series. And that gets old as well, right? You watch 20 episodes or something, and you know that it's only in the last 4 that any movement is going to be made, and the guy you think you're following as the main head honcho gets revealed to be just a smuck, and the guy behind him is now the new guy. Huh. And then you have all these switcheroos for the purpose of keeping the story going. And I don't think you should be in a position where you're artificially creating stuff to keep the story going. So I do. Well, we're not going to be able to solve, unfortunately, the layout of the TV land this year.
Plus, if the Vorgons decided to go back 5 minutes earlier, now you'd have 2 sets of Vorgons.
Yeah, but a nanosecond before, you wouldn't have noticed them, for example.
Maybe. They just happened to go from there to there, be in a different spot. But then again, had they not been there to create that past, they wouldn't be there to create the future, if that makes any sense. So, time travel paradoxes is what gives Captain Janeway a headache. All right, well, we're pretty much coming to the end. They don't find the UTOT, but they did find the UTOT. They destroyed the UTOT. Picard goes back to the ship, and, you know, number one, I had a great time. And, oh, by the way, you and I need to talk about that Horgon thing. Nice one. Good one. Good one. Do you think Troy knew all along what the Horgon was about? And I'm finding it hard to believe Picard didn't know what the Horgon was about. Seems like he not only didn't know what the Horgon was, he had never heard of Ryza. And I find both to be impossible.
I'm confused.
Well, when Riker's telling Picard of... Let's go way the heck back to the beginning. I know this perfect place. It's called Ryza. You're going to love it because of the women. I kind of have a hard time believing Picard not only didn't know what a Horgon was, but didn't know what Ryza was to begin with. Okay, I got a thumbs up from Chris. James is silent.
No, I mean, this is what I mentioned at the beginning, right? Riker seems to have this knowledge of this small, out-of-the-way planet. Yeah. And it's like, you know, me telling you, Lou, so, hey, Lou, I've got this. There's this great place you can go to. You can kind of get anything you like. And you probably haven't heard of it, but it's Las Vegas. I mean, to me, it didn't feel right. It's that
right.
It's clear that everyone should know about it, but at the same time, it seemed to be Riker's little dirty secret.
A very dirty secret.
And I have to say, I loved the scene with Troy where she walked out of the room after Riker saying, oh, have I mentioned the women? And he went, yes, Commander. Too many times.
Okay, guys, we do have to go on, so we've pretty much come to the analysts. Is there something you guys need to bring up?
I'm good. I'm good. Anything else will come in my final thoughts.
Yep, I'm good too.
But why don't we do that? It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to Ben, with 1 being the terrible stuff and 5 being the Ben, the great stuff. It's a 2. I'm sorry. I think it's a 2. I was bored with this. Sometimes I was bored with the episode. I was watching Dora the Explorer for a while, and I don't know. Sometimes maybe Dora the Explorer would have been more fun. At least backpack talks in that one. This one didn't. I like Vash. She's okay. She is kind of cute, I suppose, in her own little way. And being about 20 years younger than Picard, my guess is, I don't know if you guys would agree. Sovak, nice little twist to the Ferengis, because again, we don't know much about the Ferengi and what motivates them. I don't know. I wish I had my notes where I really had a lot to say, but I don't recall. So I'm just going to give it what I knew I was giving it to begin with, and that's a 2. So, Chris, what about you? Can't be a Ben.
No, I don't think this is a perfect episode. However, I will say this for this episode. There are those episodes that you watch that maybe you recognize are not completely competently put together. They're not perfectly edited and revised. They're obviously those episodes that were quickly shuffled out, or they're those episodes that have weaknesses that were never fixed. But this episode, despite all those things, is one of those episodes for me that I constantly come back to. Whenever I think about, hey, I'd like to put on an episode of TNG, there are a handful of episodes that come to my mind. This is one of those episodes that I want to put on. I love Picard a lot. And as I've considered TNG, which is my first actual series that I watched, I watched the movies first, so I love all the Old Testament characters, so to speak. But I really love TNG the most, I think. I love their movies the most. Mm-hmm. I love the characters in TNG the most, and it's the first series that I actually watched all the way through. So it has that place in my heart. This is one of my favorite episodes. I have to give this episode a 4 out of 5. It's not a perfect episode, and I recognize that, but it's one that I consistently come back to because I really love it. And I can't even quantify what all I love about it. It's just something that I enjoy. It feels like home to me. I love the set designs. I love the characterizations. I love the things this episode makes me think about, the characters this episode makes me think about. So I think that in the pantheon of Star Trek, this is probably low on the list of great episodes, but it's very high on my list of personal favorites. 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5 it is. What do we want to call a 4? Since 5 is Ben, what should we come up with for a 4? No, we better not do that, because then we'd have to actually come up with a 3, a 2, and who wants to be a 1. So we'll just leave it at that. So, Doc, what about you? A Ben?
So I'm a little in shock. So Chris, you prefer the TNG films than the original films? Really?
I really do. In fact, my absolute, this is going to really blow your mind, my absolute favorite Star Trek movie, and I can't even tell you why I love it so much, but it's Insurrection. If I'm gonna, like, if I'm going to just pick one out of the box and watch it, that's the one I throw on more often than not. And I don't know why I love it so much.
I think there's too much hatred for Insurrection. I think that is true. And I also think that there's too much hatred for Nemesis as well, unfortunately. Nemesis is deeply flawed, but it's, I actually think it's, there are good things that it, you know, that has been put together there. I'm actually really weird with TNG films, because I suspect from when compared to others, I'm kind of Generations, Insurrection, and Nemesis, and I kind of knock down First Contact. And I'm not saying that it gets to the point where I would rather watch, you know, Insurrection than First Contact, but I kind of certainly flatten the flatten the scores at the back end of the movies, rather than having, like, you know, First Contact being top film and then everything else being complete nonsense.
Well, this is a claim that really it outrages people that you want to flatline them, and that I like Insurrection better. It outrages people. I get it, but I like
Insurrection.
I love them all. That's the thing. Yeah. Is really where it's at. And I think people miss that point. They miss that little byline. I love them all. I love the TOS. I love the TNG. I love every single one. I don't even hate 5. But I just happen to like this particular one the most. And I can't quantify why. But yeah,
Should pant in a slip, should curl his chick, should flame in his ball show for all.
And there's actually, I mean, there's a very interesting story behind Insurrection actually being made with, I mean, obviously at the time with Michael Piller, it'd been pretty much the last thing he wrote for Trek, and him being kind of terminally ill at the time. And you can clearly see, you know, looking back now, you can clearly see in the overtones that was obviously being expressed from the writing perspective with that story. Anywho, I think it's my turn, and I think we're overdue to leave. but
well, Chris still isn't on, so
go on. Okay. So, as I kind of mentioned, I do think this episode lives fonder in the memory than actually on the screen. I think I had better times remembering this episode than I did watching it. And actually, I think I've had better time discussing this episode than I did watching it. There are lots of highlights, right? I think Vash is a good character, and I really would have liked them to have brought her back. There's a fair amount of decent enough humor, certainly. I actually like the scene where Picard enters into the turbo lift and Riker's there. He asks him, "Oh, so have you decided where you're going?" And he goes, "Yes, bridge." And that bit is, I like that, and we didn't get a chance to talk about that.
Yeah, sure.
I actually would have, you know, I think this episode does a good job of introducing the Vash character that I like. I think it was very well played by the actress involved. I would have liked to have come back more. I think Riker is an interesting place. Well, it's not even an interesting place. It's a place in Trek, and this is where it comes from. And I think that's fine. I think that the caper is generic, to be honest. The idea of them tracking this thing down, I think they could have gone back to. They could have gone back to this world on a couple of more occasions. And actually, in fact, they do, right, with things like. The chase has an archaeological slant to it, and so does Gambit. And those episodes would have been prime examples to bring back Vash and have her kind of involved. I think that this episode isn't quite good enough. I think it's kind of, you know, less than the sum of its parts. I thought the second time I watched it, I was more bored than the first. And I do have issues with kind of the ending in particular. Like the, you know, the switcheroo that they have where Vash has already found it and already knew that it wasn't there. And, well, why did she not just leave the planet? I mean, from a plot hole perspective, that seems a little bit weird. I mentioned that I had knocked off at that point between last week and this point of recording, and I was originally going to come in at a 3, and then I had knocked myself down to a 2 on subsequent watching. But I've enjoyed tonight so much that I'm knocking it back up to my original score. I think a 3 is probably a fairer reflection, given all of the discussions that we've had. And actually, I think I do think that it has firmed up my my appreciation and kind of, you know, love for the Vash character and how well she plays with Picard. And I think that was certainly good. So 3 out of 5 from me. And it makes it easy to work out the average.
It does?
Between
two,
the three,
three
of
four,
us.
Huh? Yeah. 2, 3, 4. That makes sense. But now you've went over me in the average. You're now at a 3.74.
But I should be over you on the averages because I'm the complete apologist that doesn't rate anything poorly. Mm.
But like I say, the guests still like Star Trek more than we do. 4.29. The worst guest rating was Colin, who gave Evolution a 3. The rest have been 3, 4. The bonding that Brian gave for the bonding, 3.75 for Allegiance for Mark. So I guess the rest have been 4s and 5s. So they like Star Trek more than we do. And Chris still isn't on.
No, and with Brian, right? He is made to come on for the Klingon episodes, whereas everyone else chooses them. So, you know, if there's a sucky Klingon episode, then he has to be honest at least.
Let me think here. I'll go back to that. Oh, no, Kieran gave Booby Trap a 3. I should mention that as well. So.
And I'm afraid I think that was after him listening to me whine for an hour about why it's wrong. Because he came in really quite in, you know, came in positive on that episode. And went, oh, yeah, well, I sort of
right. So, 3. Okay. All right, then. All right, Chris. Well, hey, we'll have you on again for the 8th time, I believe. 2, 3, 4.
8th time.
Okay, so it'll be the 5th time. We're looking for Hollow Pursuits in 2 weeks.
Oh, really? I was looking.
You didn't
for
know
next,
that?
I was looking for next week on what was that? Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Actually, the worst thing is that if he's gonna hijack Tin Man, then he's gonna do. Is Hollow Pursuits after Tin Man? Is it 3 on back to back?
Yeah, it would be.
I thought we had discussions about this last time, Lou.
Yeah, Deja Q, Matter of Perspective, and yesterday's Enterprise. Yeah, that's what happened.
You signed me on for a three movie deal, mm-hmm. And that's what you get.
Are you enjoying your portion of the royalties?
Yeah. A portion of 0 is still 0.
You got it. Nothing from nothing leaves nothing.
Nothing from nothing leaves nothing. You gotta have something if you wanna be with me. Nothing from nothing leaves nothing. You gotta have something if you wanna be with me. Ain't nobody crying, ain't nobody dying. Everybody's trying, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. If you wanna have something, you better stop fronting. What you gonna do when the 5 roll by? You better be ready so you can ride.
Good part of a song, you know, nothing from nothing leaves nothing.
I thought you didn't like urban music.
Oh, there's some.
Look at you.
Back in the early 90s, the MTV Party to Go. back then is about when I couldn't take it no more.
I hear you.
But who let the dogs out? I have no idea.
That's
what dogs
are. Late 90s, though.
Yes, it was. That's where it turned for me, is I couldn't take it no more.
Is that really an urban music, though? Who let the dogs out?
Oh, yeah.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? While the party was nice, the party was pumping.
I think there's multiple levels to urban music. There's like the really like gritty, grimy gangster stuff, and then there's the more fun stuff.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
Which it sounds like Lou likes. He likes like Black Eyed Peas and I can't even remember what the name of that. Who let the dogs out? The Banga Boys or something like that. Anyway,
wasn't it the Baha Men?
The Baha Men. There you go.
He knows that. That's the craziest part for me.
I'm good with trivia. I don't know the song.
Whoops, laptop power failure. Give me a few more minutes. Oh, Chris is on, but he's got a laptop power failure. That sucks, doesn't it? All right.
Okay, Lou, we should end the show because I need to go and have a break between sessions.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation, a telepath leads a critical mission to save an alien.
Direct mind-to-mind contact is our only hope.
The race is on to stop an enemy threat from destroying it.
If you interfere, we will destroy you as well.
Now, they face an explosive showdown.
Commander, we are prepared to defend the life of the alien.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Yes, yes, me too. Okay, guys, thank you very much for downloading. Chris, thank you for coming on. We'll see you in a couple weeks, and keep it going, bro.
See you guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Okay. And thank you for listening.
And good night.
Good night.
So now it's time to go into some forum feedback for tonight's episode, or actually a previous episode. And did we leave off with the matter of perspective?
Yes, we did.
I got that right? Good.
I think so.
All right. So the first one comes from Medic 1849. Oh, I lucked out. Just getting through the podcast, and my early thoughts are, I'm wondering, where is the nude model on DS9 and UP2? Quark needs to up his game. Right. I've pondered that myself. I don't know why there's not a nude model on... Wait a minute. No, I take that back. There was when O'Brien got stripped down in the Cardassian prison.
In Tribunal, he gets made completely naked.
Yeah, so we got O'Brien's ass. I mean, I'm not one for having O'Brien's ass, but we did see it.
I think that although there isn't usually kind of a sexual element to, to natural, naked people painting, I think that most people would prefer the lady that was in this episode than O'Brien's backside.
Definitely. He had too much flab.
And it's hard to get off proper with, watercolors. It's hard to get that detail in.
That's true. So anyway, Blair, yes, that's where it's at. You'll get to your nude model on Upper Pylon 2. Don't worry, it's coming. Maybe not the nude model, but it's coming. Okay, how about Kieran? You want to do it?
Oh, do I do Kieran? I mean, we only just said goodbye to Kieran. We should have got him on to keep them up.
No, we didn't. Kieran wasn't on this week. Kieran was on. Comes on next week.
So you're actually cutting this in correctly. Excellent.
I hope so. That's why I had to do that, so I don't screw this up.
So Kieran says, we don't have enough naked models on the Enterprise. Well, not since the days of Torn Shirt Kirk, anyway. I'd love to think that it's Ensign One Week's job to be naked, to be the naked model, but she's probably just volunteered for the gig, thinking it might get her that promotion that she's been looking for. Who knows? Maybe it worked, and that's why we never saw her again. Maybe Harry Kim should have tried it years later.
I don't think we needed a naked model on Enterprise when we had the decon.
No, true. Oh, Ensign One Week is her retcon name, by the way. So named because not only is she only in Star Trek for 1 week, but of course the really good song by Bare Naked Ladies. Now, I'm not cool enough to know the reference here. Lou, are you?
No.
Okay.
But I was just thinking about the decon when Archer had to scrub down Porthos. But anyway, continue on.
I thought we spoke about the...
speak about that.
The girl on girl on bloke on dog action.
Yeah, girl, girl on girl on man on dog, I believe it was. Go on.
Okay, unfortunately, I suspect that's a properly searched for term on the internet.
Girl on girl on man on dog. I'm sure there's got to be something out there on it. But I'm not going to be looking.
Okay, so the rest of this episode... James doesn't like it. Really? Have we finally found one episode he won't apologize for? I'm shocked, mainly because it's not even a bad episode. Yes, it does have similarities to Ex Post Facto, in that it's basically a mad shagger Starfleet officer in a spot of bother, and it's believable because another man's wife is involved. but it is miles better than that Voyager episode.
Yeah.
It doesn't have an annoying yappy dog for one thing. So is Riker replaceable as James suggests? Well, I don't think so. I do quite like him. And as I say, I agree that it's the best choice for this episode because it's almost believable that Riker would have been causing friction with the wife. I actually really like the fact that he looks guilty, as it suggests he was well aware of the friction that he had been causing as well. On the hugely important issues of where does Porthos poop, I'm going to suggest it's the same place that the rest of the crew poop, and that there's a magic toilet just off the bridge, which also has a little grassy area where Porthos does his business. In which case, I'd imagine that Archer has to follow Porthos around with an inside-out bag so that when Porthos does his business, Archer can pick it up and wrap it up and then throw it out an airlock. The 24th century might be more civilized, and pets on the Enterprise-D can have their poop recycled into the replicators.
I doubt he does. You know, I bet you there are times that Archer and Porthos are walking around the ship, Porthos lays a crap, and Archer just, ah, hell with it, walks off, and some lowly ensign or crewman has to come up and clean up.
So he has juniors for this. He has.
Yes.
So where did Porthos come from? Did we have a discussion about Porthos in
I don't remember that.
I mean, we must have done, otherwise
well, yeah.
Kieran has just gone completely mad. I'm not even going to think about eating recycled doggy poo. I'm sure it's fine. I know astronauts on the ISS drink recycled pee after all. A few centuries of technical advances and I'm sure we'll all be eating poop. Well, hey, if you go to certain like fast food restaurants late at night, you might be doing that already. I agree that this is definitely not a holodeck malfunction, but I'm going to disagree with James about the recreation. I actually had no problem with the holodeck recreating the experiment itself. My impression has always been that most of the important equipment was on the surface, and the station itself housed nothing more than a bunch of mirrors to focus the Krieger waves. If that's the case, there's no reason the holodeck couldn't recreate much of the experiment. There was certainly some amount of experiment that was planet-side, that much is certain. Maybe I'm just more forgiving than James in this instance. Staying with science, the transport trope being able to beam even after the explosion is quite effectively answered in this episode for me. It all comes down to the containment beam. Once you're inside that, you're contained within it, air and all. So even if you're surrounded, disintegrate around you, you're fine. This is one area of Star Trek 09 I didn't like, incidentally, because as far as I was concerned, Amanda should have been fine. Of course, in Star Trek Into Darkness, Carol Marcus was able to run around mid-beaming, and I have a problem with that too. Actually, let's not get into JJ's ideas of science, as I'll get a bit wrong.
Yeah, no kidding.
By the way, actually, I think that's completely fair. Containment beam is exactly how it works. I don't know why I didn't bring that one up. Going back to this episode, the containment field is what caused the beam to bounce back and blow up the station. So it's clearly doing a good job of keeping things out as well as keeping things in. And certainly the science here makes a lot of sense to me than a couple of weeks ago when a super soldier was punching his way out of a containment field. Again, very good point. I enjoyed the courtroom battle in this episode. It was entertaining. We got to hear a variety of witnesses' testimony ranging from probably too ridiculous. But the ridiculous was based on the third-hand evidence, so anyway, that shouldn't be too much of a surprise. However, I agree that Riker being guilty until proven innocent wasn't answered here, and all Picard did was create reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right when you say that you can't know for sure that the final sequence of events is the correct one. To paraphrase Spock from Star Trek VI, all we have here is a theory which happens to fit the facts. We need evidence. The only real evidence they have is the timing of the regular Krieger waves activation and the fact that the explosion came out of regular timing of an exact amount of time it would have taken to bounce off the containment field. Without any other explanation, the testimony that exonerates Riker would have seemed the most likely. I'm betting that Riker was still into the wife, though. Overall, I don't have too much bad to say about this episode. I don't really have too much good to say about it either. It's a fun courtroom episode, but there are far better courtroom episodes. it's fun. It's a fun Riker is horny old devil episode, but Riker has better moments too. I thought about the signs and had no problems, but then the signs wasn't that exciting either. The holodeck behaved itself, but then it behaves itself when Barclay plays with it, and the goddess of empathy is nowhere near. It's nowhere to be seen in this recreation, so it's not as good either. Ben and Chris were great for the second week running. I'm rating this episode and not the past podcast here, so I'm going to give it the middle of the road 3 out of 5.
All right.
So thank you very much, Kieran, for that feedback.
Absolutely. All right. And our last one comes from Endicor, who says, before the rewatch, I had fond memories of this episode that cooled somewhat while watching it again. Then after listening to the podcast, I'm inclined to agree with James and say that it is not a good episode. Yeah, you did give it a 2, didn't you? He says, these points of view stories can be really fun if played for comedy. If each character over-exaggerates their own virtues while finding fault in everyone else's. This could have worked if, for example, Riker had caused a rather harmless diplomatic incident due to some cultural misunderstanding. Hearing first-handed testimony from more than the main crew could have also been fun. Instead, we get a love affair murder mystery plot straight out of the 1950s pulp novels that hinges on some 0.0014 second techno babble detail that I didn't understand. For an incriminal investigation, there was too much emphasis on a secondary witness testimony and not enough on physical evidence. If Riker did shoot his phaser, they could simply check whether the phaser's batteries were drained or not. And how did that alien authority even know that the weapon was fired when they weren't there and the Enterprise was? I think because their ground telemetry determined that a pulse was beamed from where Riker was standing into the chamber or whatever they called that. But what's interesting is their ground stuff should have also been able to detect the pulse that went to the transporter beam and beamed back towards a reactor. So if the doctor had created that pulse that was designed to kill Riker, oh, by the way, this is me talking. If the doctor created that pulse that was designed to kill Riker, I'm surprised that their records don't show that already. I don't think we talked about that, but doesn't that make more sense? It should have shown it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. Well, he says, I was disappointed that there were only 2 main testimonies of the events and they completely forgot about Geordi. What if Geordi planted a bomb triggered to go off when there was no human life signs in the vicinity because he wanted to take credit for the professor's work? To the audience, that would have been any more unbelievable. To the audience, that wouldn't have been any more unbelievable than Riker's alleged behavior. I can't even feel bothered enough to watch this episode again to understand how the 0.0014 second variance in something or other and Krieger wave relates to the professor attempting to murder Riker with an energy gun and blowing himself up in the process. Nor do I feel passionate enough to nitpick all of this episode's faults. That tells me that it's not a good episode. It had great potential, but a poor execution. 2 out of 5. He agrees with you. 2 out of 5. Look forward to critiquing next episode. Did he get his wish? No, he did not. So, if you were critiquing next episode, that would have been yesterday's Enterprise. And at this time, I don't see it in decor, so we'll see. And that was feedback for A Matter of Perspective. Thanks, guys, and good night again.